Menschheit, and this is the TRR179 podcast. Today with an episode about career development and career opportunities in the industry for PhD students. We are very happy to have three experts from the biotech industry today with us as our guests. But at first, a warm welcome to my colleague Philipp Ralfs, our student representative of Heidelberg. So hello, Philipp.
Hello, and thank you. And I would like to introduce our guest that we have here today. Our first guest is Julia Miller, who studied biology at the University of Würzburg and did her PhD at the University of Freiburg in the group of Michael Nassal, if I got that correctly, where she was applying proteomics technology to investigate biological questions. And afterwards, she switched gears and went to clinical study research. So she studied at Biomedico AG in Freiburg, which performs and supports clinical studies. And there you have different positions, first trainee, then clinical research associate, and now a clinical manager there. And then we also have today Oliver Grünvogel, who studied molecular medicine in Ulm and molecular bioscience in Heidelberg. He did his PhD in the lab of Volker Lohmann, also in Heidelberg, where he investigated the interaction of HCV with the innate immune system. Afterwards, he went a little bit away from science and went to Boston Consulting Group, where he worked as a consultant for about three years. And then he went to a startup where he worked as chief and staff, and now he's an independent consultant supporting biotech companies in strategy development. And our third guest today is Peter Wimmer, who studied biology at the University of Regensburg and did his PhD in virology at the University of Hamburg. Afterwards, he did a postdoc at the McGill University in Canada before he went to industry. So he then went to Novartis, where he first worked in clinical research and later medical franchise head and also as brand director. And then 3 years ago, he changed to AstraZeneca, where he's now director of sales and marketing, so a little bit further away from research now. In parallel, he did an MBA in healthcare management at the University of Bayreuth and also a program for leadership development at the Harvard Business School. And this also is kind of a nice transition to our first question. So Peter, from your CV, we can see that you did quite a few of educational trainings besides the job, so this MBA and also this leadership program. Looking back, what do you think is like the importance and the advantage of these programs? Were they really critical for you to develop yourself? Or do you think it's also possible to acquire these skills like learning by doing? What is your opinion?
So in general, I would always say that learning by doing is a critical part that you need to do after any kind of academia status that you have. So basically, theoretical knowledge is the best way to start when you have no practical experience, but later on, it's always recommendable to do some hands-on training. So, and for all of these educational programs that you have been mentioning, I think it's valuable to have first a theoretical background, no matter if it's in science or if it's in economics. But later on, sooner or later, you have to join the ground teams and start doing the training on the jobs.
That regard, you've also done a postdoc. So if you're sure you don't want to stay in academia, would you recommend doing a postdoc regardless or starting as soon as possible on a job?
So in my experience, and I would say that we do a lot of hirings out of, no matter if it's academia or other companies, you can always, and for myself in my personal development, it was highly valuable to do a postdoc abroad, because this is a kind of, it's always important to have an all encompassing education, and doing a postdoc later on after your PhD abroad or at another university, I would say, is very valuable for personal development. It's not an absolute must when you want to join, biotech or pharmaceutical industry. If you do it for a certain amount of time, 1-2 years, that's how I did it. It helped me a lot to come to a decision if I want to stay in university, yes or no. But it's not a downside to do this. I would say it's valuable after the PhD thesis, but it's not an absolute must if you want to change over to the industry section.
Okay, thank you.
Julia, you did the traineeship. This is maybe kind of an intermediate transition between the job and training on the job. Do you think this is recommendable for PhD students before their first real job?
Well, yeah, it depends probably on the company what is meant as a trainee position. In my case, it's a very, not a small company, but it's a medium-sized company. It's a clinical research organization. And so the trainee program was not that developed. So I did not have any different steps where I had could look into different departments. This was not the case. I started in a clinical operation, and there I get my first touched with the clinical trials and clinical studies. So it's not the, maybe not a trainee program, what we probably might know from bigger companies where you look into different departments and then you can decide where to end up. So for my case, it was more like first work as an associate and to have little responsibility and then to grow in the company and to grow with the processes and get more and more responsibility and can show that I can handle the responsibility. And that was more the case. But I think in general, a trainee program might be a good way. But also, I think it's might be easier to get the first step, for example, into clinical research in smaller companies, because at bigger companies they probably usually you have to have 5 years experience or even more, and then it's quite tough to make the first step into this field. So in my case, maybe the trainee program was not the best program, but at least the company was small enough that gave me the chance to have a look into this kind of clinical research.
Another question to Julia. So you're working with clinical studies now, right?
Yeah.
Was that something that you kind of always wanted to do, or did it something that rather developed during your PhD? I mean, it was a very big change, of course, from your PhD topic, how it usually is, of course. Was it something that you were interested in for a long time?
Probably everything about what you mentioned, a bit of it, because I had no experience what it is about clinical research. And during my PhD, I like you read the title of my PhD thesis, it's quite long. And the main thing what I did is kind of to try to find a new target against hepatitis B that might eventually lead to a new therapeutic approach, which is and then I thought like, okay, and when we have this new drug, what would happen afterwards? What are the processes? And then the next step is also very interesting. What happens when we have a new drug? How can it find the therapeutic application in the clinical routine? And then I get more and more interested in that. I read more and more about that during also my application process. And I met someone who also worked in this field, and we had a kind of a little exchange. And then so the interest just developed.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. How was it for the others? Like, for example, Oliver is now like a consultant, independent consultant. Peter Wimmer is now head of a director of sales. The sales and marketing, was that like things that you were always kind of interested in already before your PhD, or they kind of developed, especially for you, Peter, who were like already like kind of a longer career, I would say, did like different steps?
I don't know how it is with Oliver. I see him already smiling, but I remember my first few days at Novartis very well. I had absolutely no clue about clinical trials. And I was literally having a small panic attack on the first few days when I only got the job. I was not so clever than Julia. So I only got the job because there was an offering, and obviously I guess I wouldn't have gotten it, but the second guy in the same department, he quit on a short notice. So they had two positions to fill, and well, due to the time constraints, I guess they took me on. And I had literally no experience of clinical trials. I was supposed to write the protocol that then was for heart transplant patients. And quite frankly, I didn't understand any word of the protocol to write. It's about 100 pages for a clinical trial. And then later on, you're supposedly have 1 or 2 weeks to go to the ethics committee and defend this. So it was less planned and less thought through than Julia said. But and I at the first day I entered the building, I thought that I will still see a lab. It's basically 100% office work. Huh? Okay. So it was a rude awakening, but well, you do the best you can. Huh? So I guess when I see Oliver laughing all of the time, it's either completely different for him or he had the same experience.
A little bit of that. So I never had any idea I'd go into consulting when I started my PhD or even halfway through. Never was even on my list of things that I could consider doing. I was always planning to get PhD and then see, or do a postdoc, or maybe join industry, really in quotation marks, because I think none of us had any idea what you actually do when you start out in your PhD. And only during the last weeks and months of the PhD, I really started figuring out, what do I really want to do? And I noticed that I wanted to do something else that probably wouldn't end up in academia for me. But I also started noticing that I had never done anything else, even almost practically nothing outside of virology. And I was panicking in a sense that I felt that I didn't have any other experience than being in the lab. And I looked and started running towards something that was so far away from what I had done before as I could possibly imagine. And then literally when I got into consulting, my first project was the transition of life insurance policies from one company to another using new AI approaches. So I had no applicable knowledge. I had nothing. It was completely crazy for me as well. But yeah, in the end, you find a way to do it. And that's actually the fun part that I was looking for. It was really this something completely different, something completely new. I was working in the first year on things that were completely separated from healthcare. That was also my intention, to really try out something new, and then went back into the pharma and healthcare sector over time when I was doing the consulting work. But this variety was something that I chose intentionally, but I was still overwhelmed by how different it actually was, but actually it turned out to be a lot of fun as well.
Yeah, a lot of new experience, certainly. A lot of new things learned.
Yeah, absolutely.
What is your, so as a consultant, most of the people don't really know what a consultant specifically does. What is your impact on the companies that you now consult as an independent consultant? I mean, you also work with biotech companies. But what are your responsibilities in these projects, for example?
Very concretely right now, I'm mostly working with smaller biotech companies. And there, the impact is probably even much larger than I had before. So my current project is to support a company that's already listed. They work mostly on industrial biotech, so enzyme production, similar things, on spin-off of a new business line. So their internal teams have developed new CRISPR-Cas-like tools, some with new modalities, some with different modalities, and it just doesn't fit their business strategy. And they noticed it's better to spin this off and have somebody else finance the additional development. And that's around the time that I came in. So I'm doing mostly the project management for the leadership team who is going to be running the spin-off. Also doing the strategy development. So that means what kind of opportunities can we think of developing? Should we consider therapeutics? We can go into diagnostics. We can do genome editing in plants and other things, just for example, and try to determine for the future what kind of businesses can make sense to invest in now versus others. So that's a lot of research work. You try to find out as much as you can about the markets. You need your science background to understand what the markets are, but you also need a little bit of a different view and a harder analytical view as well on what's truly valuable, because as scientists, everything is interesting, but in the end, to turn into business is sometimes very hard. It's more often a choice of what you need to deprioritize or what can you not do. And so in that sense, I'm basically on the one side really project manager for the thing, but also on the other side, I'm doing a lot of the long-term strategy and planning. And that's something I also did in the chief of staff role before. So it's keeping a lot of different work streams on track as a person who's somehow always in between the business teams and the research teams, because I, over the time, and also in first consulting company I was with, learned to speak different languages of the different departments. But then again, every project can be different. So also done, for example, market analysis studies, what kind of partners or customers would make sense for a company, completely different things. And that's also something that I enjoy right now. It's this diversity of projects, of tasks, and I don't always know what I will need to do on the next day or the next week.
That sounds very exciting.
How was that for you, Peter? So you also switched kind of from science, product development, more into the marketing direction. How did that happen? And how do you evaluate your impact now on the field?
So first I have to comment on what Oliver said. Huh? So okay. Regularly the consultant guys are our arch enemies. We don't like them. On the front side, because they ask a lot of stupid questions from our point of view, and we think that we know better anyway. Huh? I think the truth of the matter is that that's part to the answer of your question as well. So as a subject matter expert, how we call it in the companies here, so we're all subject matter experts. Scientists are subject matter experts. You get lost in the details. And everything is interesting all at the time. And basically, you don't really have resource constraints. Huh? So you everything is interesting. You research everything. You can try to apply for money in academia as well, right? I'm deliberately exaggerating a bit. But in the end of the day, it helps if you have an outside view. And if you see the economic side of a thing as well, because at some point in time, you either need to make decisions or, as Oliver said, you need to take priorities and then you need to follow up on these priorities. Because otherwise, you can research everything forever. If it never hits the from bench to bedside, right? If it never hits the patient, if you never get a drug launched, marketed, getting it out there to the treatment of the patients, it's all nice and fancy ideas. So I think Oliver answered the question better than I could myself. I changed over from science to the economics part because I think it's basically two parts of the same metal. If you know science and understand science, that's the best thing that you can do. That's the groundwork for, and I guess that's the same what Julia did. How you, when you start in clinical research, you have your science background, you may have your PhD, you know how to tackle problems and solve these scientifically with a rigorous method. But at some point in time, and I guess that's what Oliver is doing today, and I still don't like the consultants, but most often they're right in the end. What you need as a second part is always for the science guy, you need at one point in time, you need let's call it economic rigor as well. Take decisions, work toward a goal, and make priority decisions.
I think that's a rather accurate description of science sometimes. But I want to know, Julia, is the clinical research you're doing more directed compared to the science you're doing doing your PhD? And maybe what are the main differences you've observed?
Well, for sure, the main difference is a bit that I'm not standing in the lab anymore. I don't flip the epis and I don't have a pipette in my hand. It's just office-based and the computer, and my daily work is checking emails, have telephone calls, telephone conferences, make meetings, find decisions for problems, interaction with different departments. So this is completely different as it was in the laboratory. And also clinical research, there is the word research, but basically what I'm doing is not really research. I'm a project lead to conduct a study, and at the end we're collecting data and we have our statistics and our data management that in the end make the analysis, and then we have our medical writing team that write the article. And I'm kind of really more, I have to read the protocol, so I have to understand it. My research, my biology background helps me a lot to conduct the study. But my impact for new research is not that as much as it was maybe in the lab. So it's totally different work and totally different kind of position. But it's interesting because I have so many different tasks. So at the end, I do everyday emails and telephone calls, but I end up with different people, and every day there are different problems to be solved, and every study is at a different point in the phase. So every time it's kind of a new things where you have to work with.
Yeah, I found this quite interesting when I was reading your CV. You had like a section of like skills, and it was, I mean, mainly soft skills, right? That are critically important for most of the people that leave academia, especially, but also for everybody that stays in academia, of course. Most people are quiet during their PhD, but and then when they look for jobs, they are often like shy to really, they don't really, you know their skills and what differentiates them for somebody that didn't do a PhD. I don't know. Do you have any idea how this could be like? I don't know how people could be supported or maybe, I don't know, motivated to also deal differently with that and deal like, more proud way, kind of. I mean, to any of you, maybe, question.
So I think here it's often, you have a feeling, I think you pointed it out as well, you have a feeling that you don't have skills or you somehow have never done anything
exactly
that would apply in the business world, but so many skills that you have or learn in your PhD without even trying are some things that are really, really valuable outside for almost any job. It sounds sometimes too generic, but just imagine managing a 3 to 5 year project practically on your own, taking more and more responsibility, being responsible for success and failure in the end, or just even managing to write a 100, 200 page document that's in the end your thesis is a huge skill. And we sometimes forget that we actually do a lot of these things. And just what you can learn on the project management side, or at least the structured problem solving that we as scientists, I think, way too many times take for granted, are some things that are super valuable out there. And just basically pointing out to people, hey, you already have a lot of skills. You don't need to wear a suit to learn them. You can just do that in your bench, in your lab coat as well. Could really, I think, support some people on the way.
Mm.
I couldn't agree more. And at the same point in time, maybe that's the same what you're doing here is, if you have gotten these knowledge as Oliver described at some point in time, it's always good if you have somebody, Julia has been saying this before as well, you have somebody who describes you the work, how it is happening, what's happening there, gives you the courage to do this, because no matter how much information you get beforehand, you always have a bad feeling when you take this risky step. And I promise you, no matter what job you join, and I joined frequently in between the first 6 months, it always, it's not hell, but you don't like it a lot, but you get used to it. Huh? So I guess that's the feeling when you do something new that you have never done before. You're unsure, you don't know the teammates, you don't know the circumstances. It takes you some time to get out of these habits and then but basically acquire new ones until you do the same again.
Yeah, beginning is always hard, I guess. I have another question to Oliver. So after your PhD, you went to consulting, and you already kind of answered that, I think, earlier, but a lot of people actually do that. It's like not really like the most, intuitive what people think, okay, you did a PhD in biology, now you go to consulting, but a significant amount of graduate does it. What do you think, why so many people feel like interested in that? And, I mean, not like from the employer side, why consulting company hire the people, why so many PhD students actually go there? What was for you the reason?
So I think sort of be my most driving reason really was curiosity. I wanted to see something else and try to see as much as possible as I can. And that's what consulting offers you, because you have the chance and you also get the credibility that you're allowed to look into a different, completely different field, completely different industry even. So if you, as a virologist, apply just as an example at a bank, probably not very likely to happen. But if you're a consultant, they'll send you to a bank and let you help them with their problems. And so this variety and this credibility that you get is super interesting because you get a completely different view into the content side of many other industries if you want to do that. So this chance you probably won't get, or it would be very hard to get in another way. On the other side, you have a very steep learning curve that can be a personal challenge. That wasn't the major factor for me, but it really helps you develop your skills and you can see it as an investment. So I believe that was not my major reason, but I also took it into account. I believe that many people will invest a couple of years of consulting work into their career and then be able to jump into a different level of job that you would have after, because you can really think of it as an accelerator for your career. You really jump over several levels of jobs that you would normally do if you start directly in the industry. And so that really can be quite an incentive. Some people also like the lifestyle. I liked it in the beginning. I didn't like it in the end. I have to be honest there. I was just traveling too much and I was not spending enough time with the things that I also cared about most privately. So it can work for a while and that's built into the industry model. So if you do consulting, it's usually not the case that you plan to stay there for your next 30 years of your career. It's something that you do for a couple of years. And after a while, you also look for a different opportunity. And so with that, you have, well, let's say a limited downside profile. You can know a little bit what will happen to you, but you have a huge upside potential also later on for your career. Now that again is the consultant in me talking, you weigh the pros and cons, and I think a lot of people find that interesting. So this combination of something new, new experiences, and it will always pay off in some way is really a low risk situation for you.
As Peter has also mentioned, the skill set you acquired during a PhD is really a broad skill set. So did you have to somehow, like, so to say, sell your PhD to your future employers? So as a consultant, you're not required to have a PhD, but maybe also to Julia, I don't know if this is a specific requirement to your job.
No, it's not. We have examples where we also have masters, people with master's degree or coming from the studies, pharmaceutics, or how they say it. So it's not a prerequisite to have your degree in a PhD degree. But I think as it was already said that your soft skills and the things that you develop for yourself personally during the time of your PhD, which is also, I think, for many people, a very tough time. It helps you a lot to get through problems or interactions with other people and for this kind of job. But it's not really a prerequisite. And I don't know how it's going on further when you are in your career. Maybe Peter is the best to talk to when you want to go further as a team lead or maybe if you really need it, I'm not sure. I think it depends what you want to do afterwards. I think a PhD is very important when you stay in academia, then you have to have your papers and probably not if you go into, you don't want to stay in academia.
And for you, Oliver, since Peter mentioned consultants sometimes are not the most liked persons, does it help you working with these startups that are like real biotech startups? So, okay, he's also a PhD. He knows what we are doing. He understands it. Does it help you?
It really does help. It's not a prerequisite. And we also have a lot of colleagues also in the teams that don't have a PhD. But you get that automatic credibility. And actually, I literally noticed a change. When I started in consulting, I had finished the graduation, but I didn't get the title yet. So I had to wait for a couple of months. And when I changed my signature in my email to doctor, actually changed how some people interacted with me. A lot of people didn't, but for some people, it actually made a difference. Suddenly, a lot more people were a lot more polite, even if it was in a completely different field. And now it's really, really important because, yeah, in science background, it's very different on the recognition. And you basically introduce yourself as somebody who has at least a basic understanding of everything, even if it's then a completely new therapeutic area or a completely different field of biology. People will talk to you differently because they'll add more details, they'll give you technical details that you probably wouldn't receive right away, and it makes the interaction smoother. And also in the start phase, it certainly helps you, at least in consulting, because yes, it's not required to have a PhD, but it's seen that you have spent a lot more years working somewhere else. You have a lot more life experience, but also different set of soft skills that they basically take as a prerequisite. So the company already rewards you for that in a sense.
Yeah, I don't know. Peter, did you maybe also want to comment on this? How important PhD is, like, in your company, like on your level, let's say, how many people with a scientific background have a PhD? Could you also get there without, for example?
I think both Julia and Oliver hit it on the spot. It's not a prerequisite. It makes some things easier. There is two aspects that may have not been mentioned before, but Oliver said it once. I do recognize we have a lot of people who join today with a bachelor's degrees or master's then. What you do recognize is that if you once did 3, 4, maybe 5 years your PhD, you recognize that the people, they have some more life experience. Huh? And most often people encountered some problems or hurdles that they had to overcome during these years. So that's one thing. It's not a prerequisite for the job itself. It may sell in a way, as Matthias has been asking, well, you might start out with a higher, at least in the pharma companies I have been, that you start out in the beginning with the tariff, in the highest grade in the tariff. With a PhD, you immediately start in the highest tariff group. With a master's or bachelor's, you don't, but most likely you catch up in the 3, 4 years that you have more time until the PhD starts there. But it's not a prerequisite in the higher level. No, it's not a prerequisite in itself. It gives you slightly more job opportunities in the way, generally, as a scientist. There was somebody once, I have a very good colleague who said this, and he's true. So as a scientist, you always have the chance later on, if you want to capture up on the economics background. You can do courses, you can capture the things. But the ones who started out with economics, they have a hard time to capture up to the guys with science, because all of the lab work, the time you spend with experiments, chemistry, and so on, you can't catch up to this. Huh? So if you do it the way science and then economics, you have a head start that people from a career perspective do hard to catch up if they try to do it vice versa. It's independent of the title, but I do recognize what Oliver said, and that's true. There are still a lot of people, if you can put a few doctor or whatever in front of your name, it gives you more credibility. Yeah,
yeah, it was unfortunate. I was surprised that it was actually the case, and I really wanted to test it, and the data came out true.
Peter, do you feel the same about catching up on topics with the educational programs you did? So you did the leadership program while working, for example, right? Do you think this is way easier than just studying again, doing another bachelor in a leadership program?
I think Oliver had the perfect wording before. He said that you put a lot of, for the consultant part, you put a lot of time in. You do earn a decent salary, but compared to the time they put in the beginning, the travel time they have, the working hours they have, and they start out in this job, they're horrendous. But it's an investment. Huh? You do this upfront investment to later on capture the gains out of this. And the same is true for these educational programs as well. Nobody has to do after getting your job. You're never forced. There's tons of intra-company educational programs, people development, career development. This is happening a lot. People don't stay with the company if you don't offer these programs. But if you want to join then another university, for example, do economic studies in between on the weekends for 4 years, as it was, for example, in my case, if you want to do it like this, it's an upfront investment. And it costs some money. The company might support you, but it costs you money. It costs you free time. And you obviously do this not only out of interest, but because you want to capture the gain afterwards as well. And for me, this was the first step before I moved over from the science, clinical research, then to the economics part. It's a very simple approach. Huh? You first learn the theoreticals. If you know the theoreticals and think that this might make sense, then you change over to the job and try to do the practicals. You recognize that you have no clue, but still, then you can start this new with the theoretical background and try to make an impact there or take this as part of career development. So I like these educational programs a lot. You can spend most of the time in the intra-company ones. And it may be true, as Julia said, that the bigger the company, the more the support or the people power they have to support this. It's just bigger. People can cross cover when you're away doing these studies. So this can help a lot. And I still like it a lot because otherwise you can, if you want to, and I would say 90% of the associates I have in the team, they never ever do a second external course than within the company. Within the companies, they are good, but I would never put the intra-company educational things in my CV. So that's the kind of test that I do if I think it's really feasible to spend a lot of time and even money for this.
Okay. I think I think we're pretty much through. I don't know, Matthias, if you have any other question.
Yeah, maybe we had one last topic, as it is often discussed, networking. Maybe to finish everything up, short statement or advice for the listeners on how to create valuable relationships and how to network.
So let me start off. I would say most important thing ever, maybe more important than all programs and anything else, at least for the industry jobs, a bit, but not so much for PhD. You do only work in teams with hundreds of people. You have a dozen or two dozen meetings a day. So everything that you do later on in the jobs, at least that I know, it's exclusively working with people, no matter if you're in a managerial role where you have a direct reports as well, or if you're a subject matter expert and or work on a certain program. There is nothing more than working with people, and networking is an essential part of this. There has not been one job that I have been applying for where I didn't know before that I will get it. So you need to do this because, quite frankly, if you change over to another job, another opportunity, another project, the team there wants to know you, and they want to know that they will spend dozens, hundreds of hours with you, and that they like you and that they can work with you. So putting time in there pays off hundredfold.
That's very nice advice. Thanks. Julia, what's your take on it?
Yeah, so for me, it's my first job position, what I have, but I kind of experience the same. It makes working days so much easier if you network and take it really serious, because and when you really know the other one, which is you are talking to, even also if it's a very important meeting, don't forget that we're just human beings and laughing is allowed, and it's necessary also to have a better connection. So this was my experience too, because first I think about my first meeting, I was so serious. I was like, okay, I have to be really focused on, and everyone was laughing and making jokes and was like, well, wow, this is this is nice here. And then I got relieved, and it's way more fun to work like that. So yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and I also fully agree that it's super important to network. What I typically hate is seeing networking as this sort of sleazy activity where you try to cozy up to someone in order to gain something. Networking is something that you do naturally because you interact with people all the time. If you're in a job, you're forced to interact with people. If you're in a PhD, you're forced to interact with people. It's not this chasing somebody for a gain. It's actually an exchange with people. And everyone I've met is actually happy if you ask them about what they do or why they were doing certain things. If they can teach you something, most people are super happy, but also usually they learn from you as well. So don't ever forget that it's also, it's a two-way street. You also have something to share. Even you think you're just coming out of a PhD or something and you don't have anything yet, you do have something there. And it's sometimes a lot of work. Just example, you do networking at a conference, that's your job there. It's a lot of work to follow up with everybody, but actually it's very rewarding. And in the end, it's just, you meet so many interesting people as well. You actually want to stay in contact as well. So don't feel bad for networking in some way. And also I think many scientists, I myself come as in there, are rather introverted. And it's not something that you just don't do because you feel that it's not something that you, is your nature or something like that. You do it anyways all the time, every day, even if you want or not. So don't feel bad that in some way you don't have that network that you feel that you have. You really truly have it somewhere else, and you will find people that are really happy to talk to you as well.
Thank you for sharing that with us.
Yeah, I think that's a very important clarification, that networking is not just following people that you want something from on LinkedIn, but just natural interaction with everyday colleagues. All right.
Thank you, everybody. And I wish you all a nice evening.
Yeah, thank you very much for your participation and your insights.